Another day, another task. Think fast with a whole nother mission complete.
Successful-ish.
Pick up the weight, press on, and act on the visions I see.
I'm successful-ish.
Sit back and bask in the glory of all the goals I achieve.
Successful-ish.
Lose a stack, get it back, reinvest, hope, wait, then I roll up my sleeve.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Successful-ish. I'm Sarah Michelle. And today on the podcast, you're going to be a little hungry after you hear this conversation. We are talking to charcuterie expert, Allie Lanham. I don't even know what to call her, charcuterie expert, charcuterie artist. It's just absolutely, you have to look at some of the photos of the way that she is able to make food, just something that belongs in the Louvre. She is 27 years old and has owned the Hangry Lady, best name, for 3 years now. And prior to opening the Hangry Lady, she graduated from culinary school and then went on to work as the executive chef of two local higher-end restaurants in town for a total of 3.5 years. During that time, she was named one of the 40 women to watch by the Iowa Restaurant Association. Since opening the Hangry Lady, they have grown exponentially, moving from Nubo City Market into their own brick and mortar, winning a $15,000 grant from Main Street, Iowa to expand, and being voted number one caterers in Cedar Rapids, which is impressive for anyone, but specifically not even in the 30s yet. That's pretty awesome. So, Allie, thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Sounds really exciting when you say that all-encompassing.
I feel like that should be something where we should just all have someone in our bio, like every few months, just to like hype ourselves up and be like, yeah, it did.
Right.
Yeah, pat on my back. I am kind of awesome.
Yeah.
It's
hard to accept sometimes.
Yep. The first time that I actually had your charcuterie, I know that I walked by a million times in the market and I've had the juice and all of that. And it just was always intriguing. But it was at a grand opening of the Carriage House, I think. And there were these little charcuterie cups and it was next level. Like little bottles of balsamic that were stuck in the tomatoes and like flowers. And it was just like, I almost didn't want to eat it. It was so beautiful. So I'm really excited because I'm a big charcuterie fan. Like that is one of my favorite dinners where if I don't know what I want to eat, I'll just go to the grocery store and just buy like a bunch of random stuff. And that will be my dinner. And I love it. And it's never as pretty as yours. So I'm excited to learn a little more about this. Before we jump in, what is something that you failed at this week?
I was going to say some of the typical business owner things, like forgetting to turn the lights on and like realizing halfway through the shift that there were no lights on in the shop and boring things like that. But I think the real fail is January is really the only slow season that we have, which is lucky. But just remembering to like give myself grace with that and enjoy it while it lasts, honestly, because once it gets busy again, I'll be wishing I had those times where I had nothing better to do but doodle on a piece of paper or whatever the case is. So I think that would be the fail that many business owners probably experience. You're your own worst critic. If you're not constantly doing something, you feel like you're not doing enough.
Yeah. I think that's a big challenge just with entrepreneurship in general is like, every business has cycles where it's more and less busy, but when it's your business, it's almost like you feel it more because it's not just busy or not busy. Like it's income and not income. Like it's very much
right.
That bottom line revenue. And it's a big learning curve, I think, to go from like the consistency of, okay, I know I'm getting this amount every 2 weeks to thinking about it differently. And I know for me, like I would panic a lot when I was like, my God, it's a slow month. I'm not bringing any money. And I would have to remind myself, well, but last month I made what I would have made in like 4 months. at a job.
Exactly. So, it ebbs and flows and you good. Have to just have faith that it's coming. Yes, exactly. Yeah. I think it's different now too that I have. And so, you know, I have to make sure that they're still getting paid and getting and pay their bills, even when it's slow, because I'm going to need them when it's busy. So you just have to bite that bullet and think about that and just, you know, not pay yourself for the month, which is okay. Yep.
So share a little bit about your story. Mm-hmm. Like, how did you get into charcuterie? How did you come up with the Hangry Lady? Like, what got you where you are today?
Yeah. So, I mean, back in high school, I grew up a heavier set kid. I got bullied a lot for it my whole life. Summer going into my senior year of high school, I decided I was going to finally lose weight and like make everybody eat their words. And I did that. So I found my passion with food because by doing that, I learned how to cook for myself in order to lose weight. And so graduating high school my senior year, I'm like, I don't know what I want to do with my life, but I know that I'm good at food. And I've been giving other students like the food that I've been eating, my recipes to help them live a healthier lifestyle. So I thought I'd be a dietitian because that's essentially what they do is, you know, write meal plans for people. So I went to school for that for 2 years. And then I realized that wasn't for me, sitting at a desk typing things all day long. So I went and visited the culinary school and they were so welcoming and just made it, it looked so exciting. They had all these state-of-the-art kitchens and it just looked like a fun avenue. But I started there and it was the first time in all my schooling that everything came to me so easily. I didn't have to think too hard about stuff. It just all made so much sense. And I was top of my class and like definitely where I needed to be. So, you know, did the culinary school day I graduated from there. I was promoted to executive chef at Caucho. Prior to that, I had worked at a couple local restaurants, just getting my footing, but it was like launched into a really serious position and essentially learning how to run a business right from the jump, which I credit to being able to do kind of what I'm doing now. Because I essentially did all of the things a business owner would do there, writing schedules, ordering food, et cetera, except for paying taxes for them. So I've had to learn that part the hard way. But after that, I went to Popoli for a little bit. I knew that they would pay me well because they had been, you know, seeking me out for a little bit. And they started doing catering. And we had one lady who requested this epic like $10,000 grazing table for her wedding that she saw in California, and I did it and everybody loved it. And then I started web sleuthing like this whole charcuterie trend that was going on, and I was like, if I bring this to Iowa, people will love it, they'll eat it up. And I had written down the Hangry Lady would be a really funny business name when I was 16 in a diary. And so I was trying to figure out what to name it. And I came across that diary, like going through books. And I was like, yeah, that's what it's going to be. So.
Awesome. I love that.
Yeah.
I have to ask, I'm curious for you. What does hangry look like for you? Like, how do you know you're crossing into that danger zone?
Oh, I get a little bit irritable. Like pins and needles in my hands. Cause if I'm getting hangry, it's because I'm starving. So. Irritable, you start to feel the body like, yeah, get a little stressed out, weak. And then it's like, if anybody says the wrong thing to me, I'm gonna be a little growly. So it's best to keep food on me. I've learned my lesson since then to not let people deal with that. So I have like emergency granola bars most places to avoid that from happening. But everybody can relate to it's like, it's not just women, it's toddlers, it's men. It's like everybody gets hangry. So it's a fun icebreaker too for customers. If they don't know what to talk about or don't have a reason to stop, especially at Nubo, they would always stop just to make a joke about how they thought that our business name was so funny. So then I could, after that, you know, weasel my way in and be like, you should try this food.
Yeah, the power of branding. I never used to think that I was a hangry person because I've always been one of those people that like eats to live. I'm really bad. Mm-hmm. I'll get caught up in work and just forget, which is very opposite from my, like I come from a family. So I am the black sheep because my family like lives to eat. And lives. Like we were the family where we would go out to breakfast and like while at breakfast, my family would be talking about how excited they were about what they were going to eat for lunch.
Like,
like ridiculous. And so I always was like the odd man out. And someone pointed out to me that I don't necessarily get angry, but I get very dramatic. If I haven't eaten in a while, it takes me to this place where like, I don't know, the world is dark and sad and I start to just introspect and like, I get very, very dramatic. Like, oh, it's going to be a struggle like this forever. Yeah. And then I eat something and I'm like, actually the world's pretty happy.
I love life. Yeah. People are great. And love my job and everything just switches right away. Yeah.
The power of a snack.
I feel that. It's like, you get angry, but negative Nancy, like the stoplight's taking too long and everything just is triggering you.
Yeah. Whole worldview changes. Has it changed at all going from, so Nubo Market, for anyone who doesn't know, I think it was talked about on an earlier episode, but it's essentially like an entrepreneurial think tank market where all kinds of different businesses can kind of come in and test their models. And so you have like a little section of the market, as opposed to now you're in this brick and mortar, it's much bigger. I would imagine you maybe have more staff, more people know about you. Like, how has that changed for you?
It's been really awesome. I mean, Nubo's great, and I think that all areas should have some sort of opportunity like that available to them, because quite frankly, there's no middle ground between, you know, doing it from your home and then going to a brick and mortar. The increase in just rent alone is pretty insane. And we're, Cedar Rapids is not the biggest city in the world. So Nubo is a good middle ground for that. So it makes it affordable for you. I know when I first started, I was doing it out of a kitchen that had closed temporarily due to COVID, and then my friend's catering kitchen, and then someone else's kitchen, and then eventually my parents' house, and it was just bouncing around. Having to clean each place became a pain. And when I went to Nubo to see if I could apply, at that point I'd been making $1,000 a month, or doing $1,000 a month in sales. So like revenue is probably 300 or something, or profit, I should say. So when I went to Nubo and their smallest stand was $700 a month, I was like, oh my God, there's no way I'm going to make it. But the director was like, I guarantee you, you'll make at least 3,000. Like you'll be able to pay rent. And I was like, okay. So I did it. And sure enough, my first month I tripled sales. And then the next month we like 7 times sales and so forth. And then we moved to the biggest stall there. And then we outgrew that and now we have a space of our own. But the nice thing about having a space of your own also is that we can make our own hours. We don't have to adhere to the Nubo hours, so we can do what makes sense for us as a business, because we are kind of like a niche food establishment in comparison to others. They make things like ready to order as you order it. They're making it right away. Whereas we prep stuff ahead of time. So the most you're waiting is maybe like 5 minutes. It's supposed to be quick service, you know, we're not doing like hot food necessarily other than our soup. So it's supposed to be like convenience sake, people who are on the go. And then, I mean, technically speaking, you get all the food groups from most things that you get with us. So you could say it's healthy too.
Awesome. Do you feel like you saw any kind of change like in your confidence or just in your approach to your business as far as like, okay, am I ready for an office and they're ready for a hubby, a cart? I don't know the proper name for it. Like ready to
You're good.
Like you really just like up leveled really quickly. Like what was that like for you to kind of have to push yourself through that process?
It's always really scary, but I think what's like given me the confidence to move to a brick and mortar is that I wasn't confident in moving into Nubo in the first place. And thank God I did, because everything just went crazy tenfold since then. I rely heavily, or I have a lot of confidence, I guess, in the fact that I am from this town. I've known a lot of people from growing up here, and then I've accumulated a great reputation and lots of people who support what I'm doing from that, which gives me a sense of security that whatever I do, I know I have a big group of people that are going to be supporting me and finding a way to make sure that I still do well. But also, I'm confident in what we provide is special. It is needed. And the artistic part of it too is what makes it that, you know, people who try and do something similar to it, we always come out ahead, because it's the appearance, the little touches and attention to detail, the consistency, always showing up on time. All of those factors go a really long way anywhere in the United States, especially here in my city. People really appreciate, you know, doing, going above and beyond.
So tell us a little bit about, like, what is charcuterie exactly? For anyone who doesn't know, like, what makes charcuterie different from just a plate of random snacks?
Sure. So charcuterie technically means cured meats. So if you're using that word, that's what you're referring to, but the American version of it is what I do. So it is those cured meats, but it is cheeses, jams and spreads, fruits, veggies, nuts, crackers, etc. The trendiness of charcuterie in America too is having it be really bountiful. There's just no blank spaces. It's really filled. It's like you're exploring it as you go through it and finding new things to try. But to me, it's an opportunity to try things you might not normally try, play around with different flavor combinations, because there is so much variety, at least on what we do. We always try and switch up what we provide too, because one of the goals when we started was to introduce people to things that they might not normally try, or they might see at the cheese counter and think, like, this is too expensive. If I hate it, like, I don't want to waste $15. So we get those things for them, so they have a chance to try it in a small portion. And then they might love it, and they'll ask us, where'd you get this from? And we'll tell them, you know, we're not gatekeeping with that stuff. We want people to try new things and have fun with their food.
Do you think that part of, like, the trend in charcuterie and the recent love for charcuterie is because we all grew up on Lunchables?
Yeah, for sure.
I feel like that Lunchables was, like, the starter charcuterie kit. Was, like, I know. You got technically, your crackers, your cheese, your meat, and your chocolate.
Yep, you know it. I mean, technically it's not charcuterie because it's not cured meats in it, but it is. When people ask me what is charcuterie, I always say it's a fancy adult Lunchable because everybody gets it. But I always thought too, like, yeah, charcuterie and the way it's pretty and, like, presented now is trendy. But I remember being a kid going to the mall kiosk and getting, like, that summer sausage and cheese and making a fancy platter for a holiday. So to me, it's, like, stood the test of time. We're just making it better.
Absolutely. So what would you say are the must-haves for a good charcuterie board? Like, I know you mentioned the cured meat specifically, and just for those of us, and myself included, who might not actually know, like, what a cured meat is versus just a meat, like, maybe explain a little bit about what that is.
Sure.
What are the must-haves that we should, like, what's really delicious that we should have on our charcuterie board?
Yeah. So charcuterie, like, cured meats, you're thinking, like, salamis, prosciutto. It's usually, like, a pork-based product that is dry cured. So it'll have, like, either a casing on the outside or maybe, like, a white, like, dusty looking coating because it's been usually dry aged or cured. What wouldn't be like charcuterie meat would be like sliced like ham that you get at the deli, or like turkey, stuff like that. Like that's a lunch meat versus the cured. And the perk to that also is because it's cured, that means that it technically doesn't need to be refrigerated if you don't refrigerate it place. So you go to the store and salami on just a shelf out in the open. That's because it's cured, so that it bacteria like won't grow on it. But once you open that bag or you bring it home and throw it straight in your fridge, now it's got that moisture and condensation on it. You have to keep it refrigerated or re-refrigerated after 4 hours technically. That's the main difference. You know, you wouldn't see sliced like turkey and stuff you'd put on a ham sandwich sitting out unrefrigerated because it's not cured. So that's that main difference. And then really good charcuterie board. I mean, I love a variety. Obviously you want to have like one crumbly textured cheese with lots of salt crystals on that. Prairie breeze is a really popular one. Cheese is always do something like smoky or having like a really rich like umami flavor. Or dried herbs in it or roasted red pepper. And then we do a wild card is what we call it on every board. So that could be like apricot Stilton, which people might not pick up sometimes, or an olive infused manchego. I'm trying to think like Syrah soaked Toscano with red wine, just something that's a little out there to experiment with. But you want to have, you know, a variety of different types of cheese more than just, I mean, Colby Jack and sharp cheddar, but I still like those too. So like no shade to those cheeses. But then grapes as well. Yeah. I mean, I ate like sharp cheddar just the other night. I was like, this is so good. I put it on the board if it weren't like an appealing bright orange color to me. That's just my visual. I don't like the way that looks, but obviously too, like if you're going to have a brie on there, for example, brie is really my kind of flavorless. So to me, it should always have like a jam or a honey or something to go with it to add to that on a board. And then always fruits, because those can be eaten with all the cheeses. If you're going to do a veggie on there, there should be like a dip that it can be used with, because most people don't want to just eat like a baby carrot plain. Or broccoli plain or something like that. And if you do, good for you, but I don't. And then cucumbers are good though. Those are the exception because they add a nice crunch and they're essentially flavorless. So they're like a textural element. And then some pickled items are always good too. And then crackers, we keep those plain because you want the cheese to speak for itself and not have like crazy flavor coming from the cracker.
How long does it typically take you to assemble your charcuterie boards?
I mean, I'm pretty fast at it now. I'd say I could throw one together and I think 7 minutes is my record. But, you know, thinking like a 13-inch board, someone shows up last minute, and keep in mind too that we fold our meats ahead of time and we have them stacked in bins, and we have our cheese cut and prepped ahead of time and stacked in bins, so that we have that ability to make it quickly if someone wants us to. If I'm doing everything from scratch and hand cutting each cheese in probably 20, 25 minutes, but you know, we have a lot of stuff portioned out ahead of time, which helps.
So how do you create your designs? Because I feel like that's something that many of us struggle with putting charcuterie together. Like I can put stuff on a board, but like, you got to have a vision. You have to be able to figure out like colors and textures, but then also what tastes go together. And then you just go the extra mile that makes even my proudest charcuterie board not look great. With, you know, the edible flowers, the little balsamic things. Like, how do you come up with those designs?
I would say, so growing up, my grandma was a painter, so I've been into painting and drawing a lot of my life. So I love a creative outlet. If I thought that I could make a really good living off of painting, I probably would have chosen to do that at one point in my life. But I love what I'm doing now because it encompasses both things that I'm love and I'm good at, which is food and art. So I always start with like cheese, which tends to be beige colored, and spreading those out. And instead of having things tightly stacked together, spreading them out, making curves, making like different patterns with it. I'm also thinking like the more they're spread out, the easier it is for a customer to grab a slice and not like touch every other piece of cheese. So I start with that, and then I'll move to salami, which also tends to be like a red color, spreading that out. And then the fruits and veggies I use to split up the colors. So there's color everywhere and there's not just one big space of white cheese or big space of red salami. And then wherever I feel like there's still some spaces that could use some color or broken up a little bit, we'll do the edible flowers. Or like some tinier things you can stack on top of others, like dried apricots, golden berries, raspberries add a nice pop of color, but they're not gonna like affect the food that's below it. And like an olive would, like I wouldn't put an olive on top of other stuff because that briny flavor is gonna get on everything else. But I think it's just, yeah, about having fun with it too. When I try and like teach my how I go about things, I just tell them to do what they think that they should do. And then they do it. And I'll tell them, that's great. Or you do this and maybe curve it a little bit this way. Cause it's like those added touches, the swirls and having things cut differently that add that visual appeal.
How do you determine how much food to make? Like, what's a good charcuterie to human ratio?
Sure. So we go by the 2 ounces per person of cheese, is usually what most people will eat, or like 2 ounces of salami, 5 ounces of cheese per person. So when we do like a grazing table, that's kind of how we do the math there. But we tend to kind of add a little bit extra after that to get there. Too much food than not enough. That way, and that's like appetizer wise, if people are ordering it from us for a full meal, then we usually like add another 25% or so to that.
And then how long can you charcuterie at a party before that stuff really should go back in a refrigerator?
So 4 hours is the legal thing, according to the health department. 4 hours is how long it should sit out before it should be refrigerated so you can reheat it again. I would say that all cheeses, for the most part, are pasteurized, and again, meats are cured. So like in theory, you could probably get a little bit more time out of it, but legally speaking, 4 hours is the best bet.
Do you have like a favorite charcuterie experience? Is there a particular board or just an event, or like, is there one that stands out to you?
Yeah, there's so many good ones. I think that's the coolest part of our job, is that we get to a lot of cool parts in people's lives and special occasions. But one of my favorite grazing tables we did in Galena at their Ashton Hills Farm location in Galena. I did that with my mom, and I just really loved how it turned out. It's one that's pinned on my Instagram page. I just thought it looked so pretty, and we had some extra time, more than we thought, so we were just able to like adjust things and make it perfect. And they had a huge window behind it too, so the lighting was awesome, and it was just all around a win. And then I would say some other ones are like, just making boards and boxes that cheer people up, or are meant to be like something to bring people joy during hard times in their lives. It's really an honor to hear back from them afterwards and have them tell me that like your charcuterie box was the bright point of our week-long stint in the hospital, or of, you know, me being stuck at home with my sick mom who's like, you know, not doing hot or whatever the case is. those moments always stand out to me too, that food can have an impact like that on people.
And I think there's something important about that too. I feel like we're just such like a fast food culture. Even if it's not fast food, it's a restaurant. Like the times that I take, like that I go out to eat, like you look around and everyone's just like glued to their phone the whole time. And
yeah,
you know, everyone orders the same thing every time they go out. And it's like, I think that we miss a lot of the experience of food. Like it's just kind of lost a lot of its joy. And I think with something like charcuterie, like that is an art and a process in itself. You know, you're kind of, you have to be methodical about how am I going to pair this together? What is this going to look like? You're taking small bites. And so it's almost like that extra just psychological reminder to just maybe enjoy life, like slow down a little bit, appreciate the beauty, appreciate different tastes and textures. And I feel like it just creates a little more awareness.
Yeah, no, I love that. That's a really good point of view to think of it as. And I think maybe subconsciously, I think that way from culinary school, our teacher used to tell us all the time, like, if you can make food that it will invoke an emotion in somebody or like bring them back to a childhood memory, you've got them for life. Because those things mean a lot to people, whether they realize it or not. A mile to have the cool details, because you're right, it probably stops people from being on their phones and they talk to the people they're there with in that moment about like, how cool is this? And the comment is always like, it's too pretty to eat. And they're taking pictures and they're, you know, just looking at every little detail. So I think it's cool that we can bring that excitement to people on like every day, even in our mini like single serving boxes. People get excited about those, and maybe that's the highlight of your day. So that's really cool that we get to do that.
Well, it does. It's like a contagious sharing that inspiration. And I know I remember one time I was probably like 11 or 12 years old, and I was at a soup plantation with my family. And I don't know if they have those here in Iowa. It's like a big buffet of soup and carbs and like,
it sounds like heaven. Yeah.
Like nothing magical. It's like a total rinky dink chain, but it's so just like amazing, delicious. Like you can't be upset at the soup plantation.
Yeah.
And so it was like a family go-to. And I remember going through, like you start off in the salad line and everyone's just sort of plopping stuff on their plate. And I am a little OCD about that stuff. And so I was like distributing the carrots and like, oh, well, now I need a pop of green. I'm going to add some cucumber and like, oh, well, now I need a little bit of purple. And I remember there were people in the line that were staring at me. Like I had a, I don't know, a horn coming out of my forehead or something. And then this one lady made a comment about, are you an artist? Like, you're going to be an artist someday. Like, look how, like, you're creating art on your plate. And the rest of us are just kind of like, plopping shit on and like calling it a salad. And it was something that I had never paid attention to before. I don't think my family had ever paid attention to it. And it stuck with me because I realized like, wow, yeah, most of us, that's not a normal thing to actually like take the time for presentation, like take the time to have something pretty that you're going to eat. You know, it's all just very like, let's just get the job done. And so I think there is that kind of element of just not just the art of the food itself, but almost like getting to know yourself a little better too, because you get to have that moment of like, I am attracted to this one because of the edible flowers, or I'm attracted to this one because of the way it's shaped. Like, just creates a little more of an experience.
And I think too, that's like a testament to the phrases like always that we hear in life that's cliche, but there's a reason that they exist. And one of them is like, you eat with your eyes first. There's a reason people say that. Nobody is excited to eat like a gray and white gravy all over, like, but you know it tastes good, so you're like, okay, I'm just gonna, it'd be more exciting if it looked pretty when it was put in front of you, you know.
Absolutely. So for the person who has never done this before, I mean, obviously recommend going to Hangry Lady and getting one that's already beautiful and made for you. But for the person who's never done this before and they want to try to impress their friends, they want to try to embrace this charcuterie life, what advice would you give them to get started?
I would say get a variety of things. Obviously, like having different cheeses that are cut differently makes a big difference. Like if you go to Sam's Club, say, and get all the pre-sliced cheeses that are shingled in the pack, you know, and you lay it out just that way, that immediately to me is like no visual appeal because there's no height to it. It's laying flat. So you want to add height some way, whether it's like taking a crumbly cheese and stacking it up or cutting cheese into triangles and like alternating them. Stuff like that makes a big difference. And then same with salami. Learning how to like fold it or like roll it up and zhuzh it between two things so it like stands up and looks like flour, or take one of our classes, we'll teach you how to do that, or do a salami rose, or you could probably Google it and, you know, try your hand at it. But I think that goes a long way too, rather than just laying it flat on the board. The time that you take to stylize it and give it some visual appeal and height, that makes all the difference. Because those are the main things. And then obviously too, in my opinion, I prefer a board that's really full with stuff. If you don't like your food touching, then like by any means, you know, keep it all separate, but I like it to be really full. So once you have your basic staples in there, your cheeses and your meats, definitely fill it in with, you know, not just grapes, also like strawberries and blackberries, dried apricots. See what's in season too. People love something different, like when figs are in season or cherries or guavas or something like that. They look really pretty. They're exciting. People be like, what is this? Again, another excuse to try something new. And then also I'm a big proponent of flowers, obviously. Those can fill in any little blank spaces and add color anywhere. I know that they're not always easily accessible because we work with a hydroponics farm and we get ours grown for us. But in the summertime, you probably grow a bunch of edible flowers in your garden and you just aren't even aware. So do research on that, like marigolds, asters, nasturtiums, all of those are edible flowers. And then there's flowers too that you could buy at the grocery store that aren't like meant to be edible flowers, but you're not going to die if you eat them. And that's the important thing. Make sure they're not poisonous. You know, like a carnation, for example, is a really pretty touch. Does it taste good? No, but most edible flowers don't taste particularly great. It tastes like grass, but it adds a nice touch. Or you can do fresh herbs, rosemary, sage, orange slices, just things like that that might not be eaten, but those are the special touches that make it like photo worthy and exciting.
Well, now that I am sufficiently starving and ready to go feed myself all kinds of meats and cheeses. Allie, thank you so much for being here, for sharing your expertise, and just for bringing so much joy to the community. Do you ship, like, are you a strictly local company? Do you ship out nationally?
We are. Yeah, we're local right now. We've looked into shipping before. We plan on doing it eventually. It just is double the cost, and you know, putting that on customers sometimes can be difficult. But we are definitely considering it. We just want to make sure that when people pay double the price and they're receiving the quality that we try to hold ourselves to. So once we find the perfect thing for that, we definitely will. But we do deliver in the area, and we travel for caterings quite a bit. So
then if you're in Iowa, local to Cedar Rapids, definitely check it out. And if not, stay tuned for when they do go national, because it is quite the treat. Allie, thank you so much. For anyone listening, would love to hear your thoughts and what is your favorite thing to put on a charcuterie board. Shoot us an email at embracetheish@gmail.com or hang out with us online at successfulish.com or Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn at embracetheish.
Success and failure, none of the opposite ends. Curveball hits, gotta know where to bend. The attitude will affect destination. And if you determine when you're gonna make it. Live between successes makes life rich. Living every moment, successful-ish. Live between successes makes life rich. Living every moment, successful-ish. Hey, successful-ish. Another day, another task. Think fast with a whole nother mission complete. I'm successful-ish. Pick up the weight, press on, and act on the visions I see. I'm successful-ish. Sit back and bask in the glory of all the goals I achieve. Successful-ish. Lose a stack, get it back. Reinvest, hope with, then I roll up my sleeve. I'm successful-ish. Another day, another task. Think fast with a whole nother mission complete. Successful-ish. Pick up the weight, press on, and act on the visions I see. I'm successful-ish. Sit back and bask in the glory of all the goals I achieve. Successful-ish. Lose a stack, get it back. Reinvest, hope with, then I roll up my sleeve. Hey. All this weight on my arms need both flex. In this race, put behind, need most steps. Had to swear the learning curve, hope I don't crash. Hit your nerves when reserves got low cash. When I fail, realize that it won't last. You made it through in the past, just look back. Successful-ish, you can see how it contrasts. Failures and wins, use the past and I bounce back. You can never win if you never go and do it. Failure is a hard road, rarely ever cruising. Embracing all my wins with a handful of losing. Expect the drought season when the plan's going fluent. I can never really fail, it's all how you view it. It's all a lesson, just depends how you use it. Gather all the data and keep it all exclusive. Never ending journey and the growth is therapeutic. My identity is not in what you see, I am the better me. Mistakes others make, I see, have been teaching me. Compare yourself to others is an insult to tragedy. We were made unique, gotta use again collectively. Broke down my goals and a few look toesome. Can't take them back cause you already spoke them. Easily regressive, you don't stay focused. Focus, live between success and emotion. Successful. Another day, another task. Think fast with a whole nother mission complete. I'm successful-ish. Pick up the weight, press on, and act on the visions I see. I'm successful-ish. Sit back and bask in the glory of all the goals I achieve. Successful-ish. Lose a stack, get it back, reinvest, hope with, then I roll up my sleeve. I'm successful-ish. Another day, another task. Think fast with a whole nother mission complete. Successful-ish. Pick up the weight, press on, and act on the visions I see. I'm successful-ish. Sit back and bask in the glory of all the goals I achieve. Successful-ish. Lose a stack, get it back, reinvest, hope with, then I roll up my sleeve.